Pages and I bring it here, so we can run through it here about 10 minutes. Fast as I talk, shouldn't be a problem. So get it done, get it through. But yeah. It's been amazing to me that I worked on this thing back when the whole court ever started, first started on these slides. And the approach that I've got this morning is the same approach everybody else has had. We're going to look at the little background type stuff and the times and the events and what was going on. And then we're going to get into the text itself. Then we'll look at some lessons that are available to us in the book. And then we'll have some time probably for some discussion at the end of it over there. So, let's get the background stuff out of the way and figure out what's going on time-wise here. If you go back to the 17 periods of Bible history that we've been learning for the last, I don't know, 14 years ago or something. Started that, and we teach diligently in the foundations and in the kids' classes. The ninth period there is the United Kingdom. And this is where we can really start getting some time frames put in. Then dates and times start coming into some pretty good meaning about them. It's all arranged from 1040 to about 1000 B.C. And so get this in mind. We'll feed through this now. We come up into the time of these prophets here. David, another 40 years there. Of course, 2 Samuel 7 is the key chapter from David's reign. And then Solomon, next 40 years after that. So 40, 40, 40. And now we're to 929, 21 B.C. Next period then come in. This is the divided kingdom. 200 years there. 921 to 721. We know what happened in 721. We'll get there in a minute. Northern kingdom, Jeroboam, the 10 tribes, and here's the key part right here. There are no new kings, none. And the whole time of the holy kingdom, there was just none there. And they fell to Assyria in 721. Now they were gone forever. There was no return from captivity. It was when the northern kingdom went, it went. And Judah's in the south, the two tribes. And when this occurred here, Hezekiah is king in the south. Okay. So we'll pick up with Hezekiah then in a minute and talk about him. So keep in mind the time frame here. Hezekiah is the king in Judah when Israel fell to Assyria. Then we have the period of Judah alone, lasted 135 years from 721 to about 586 B.C. And we talked, I guess, last Wednesday night, about Manasseh. His 55-year reign of evil. Now, all the kings in the northern kingdom were evil. There were some good ones in Judah, but not all of them, by far. Manasseh was this big evil king of that time frame there. He was the one that ultimately brought the nation down. And then Josiah with his 31 good years, mostly from his part there. And then Jerusalem fell to Babylon in 586 to King Nebuchadnezzar. Now, look at these kings in Judah. Hezekiah, as we said, was the king in Judah when Israel fell to Assyria. We're going to pick up from there, just the kings down through here, to figure out where we are this morning. After Hezekiah, we have Manasseh, his 55 evil years coming in. And then Amon for 2 years, kind of a minor thing there. Then Josiah. So after all these evil years, Josiah comes in, does the reform, and turns things around a little bit, raised 31 years. Jehoahaz, 3 months, very insignificant type thing there. And then Jehoiakim, we've got him in bold letters here, that's where we're going to fit in this morning with Habakkuk, is this time frame here. So, kind of see where we are from Hezekiah to Manasseh and Josiah and down to Jehoiakim here. After that, there's not much left. Jehoiakim had 3 months, Jehoiachin had 3 months then. Zedekiah, and he is just really a puppet of Nebuchadnezzar by this time. And then we come down to the end of it. So right near the end of the fall of the nation of Judah. So, where we put it back in here? Well, it's before the fall of Jerusalem, which occurred in 586. We got to back up some from that to fit him in here. And Bob puts him about 625 to 605 B.C. That time frame there. If you look at some of the others, they put him a little bit later. 609 to 597. Really getting down to close before the fall of Jerusalem. And he is the last prophet before the captivity. Habakkuk is. So we're about to wind things up as far as Judah's concerned. Israel's already gone, and that is evil. Manasseh, his 55 years, set the stage for the fall of Judah. And Habakkuk winding things up. So right toward the end of the time of southern kingdom of Judah. That's where he fits in here. So what are the conditions? What's what we like here in the country this time? Well, they've been called on to repent over and over and over and over. And it's been unheeded. They've ignored it. And the question comes to, how long is God going to wait? How long will God wait to do to Judah what he did to Israel? They just bought them out or punish them or whatever he's going to do to them. How long will God keep putting up with it? Told over and over with the prophets, it's time to change. You got to change. And that they totally ignore that. So, how long is this sinful nation going to be allowed to continue? So that's kind of where we sit right now. That's what they're wondering, what's going on. So, judgment's coming. And the whole book here is going to cover about the fact that the wickedness of Judah will be punished by Babylon. That's going to be very strange. Habakkuk has a hard time swallowing that. How a nation like Babylon is going to punish Judah. And we'll get into that in the text here. And then Babylon also is going to be chastised. They won't escape either. This is kind of the whole theme behind the book and the questions Habakkuk is going to ask here, is these things here. So, let's get into the text now with that background a little bit. Anybody got any thoughts about that? We'll put in something left out. Kind of see where we are with Habakkuk. Okay. Let's get this text and kind of breeze through it right quick and see what we find. All right. In chapter 1 and verse 2, Habakkuk asks a question. What did he ask? What's his question?
How long
are you going to wait? Okay. How long are you going to wait, God? How long are you going to let this situation keep going on? This been going on, this evil here, they should have been told to repent, and they won't do it. Why are you not hearing my plea to do something about this thing? It's vile, it's ugly. How are you going to put up with it? That's the question he asked. Okay? And then he says that there's no justice around here. There's just none. The wicked surround the righteous, and I don't understand what's going on. So Habakkuk is very confused. Then God replies to it. And what does he tell him?
Wait. Just wait.
Said, you just look out and watch. Said, something's coming that if I told you about it, you wouldn't believe it. And that really stirred him up a little bit, okay? Said, look and watch and be astounded. I'm going to do something that you wouldn't believe even if I told you it was coming. Okay? And so that's his reply back to him. Now, hold that up, thought just a minute. We'll come back and pick a text up. Let's jump off on one little side down here. Look at verse 5. Look among the nations and watch, be utterly astounded. I will work in your days, which you do not believe, he told you. Look over to Acts chapter 13 right quick. Acts chapter 13. Acts 13, and read verse 41. Joel, you get there, read 13:41.
Behold, you despise and wonder and perish. For I work a work of your day, the work which you shall in no wise believe, till the men declare it to you.
Okay, look back up to about verse 37. What's the context here? Preaching, tell them God raised Jesus up, okay? Be known to you, brethren, this, through this man that's preached to you the forgiveness of sins. And him, everyone that believes in him, verse 39. You could be justified by the law of Moses, but you can't be justified through this. Beware, therefore, that's been spoken, the prophets come upon you. So he's using this verse here that something's happened in your day that you probably won't believe either, but you better believe it. So he references back to Habakkuk here, this same expression here about you're not going to believe this thing. Some great's coming. You may not believe it. And he uses the verse back to Habakkuk here to pick up on verse 5 here. Okay, now in verse 6. Who's coming to play here? The Babylonians. Okay? He says, God names here the Babylonians, the Chaldeans, a bitter and hasty nation. They just march through and take over, wiping out the locust plague. And anywhere they go, destruction follows. And he said, that's the ones that's going to destroy the nation of Judah. Okay? Now, verse 11, Babylon gets their power from where? They think. Where's the power come from?
Coming from his God.
From their gods, right? Yes, yeah, well, they get to. And they infuse this power to his gods. That's what verse 11 is about. We're going to get more about this in the chapter 2. And these gods they've got and how they operate with them. And we'll talk quite a bit more about these idols. Chaldeans coming to destroy it. They think they get the power from their gods. We're going to see in a minute where the power really comes from. So, after this, then the Bible gets another question. So, what's the other question? Verse 12.
How can you use a nation?
Hey, wait a minute here. What's going on? Yeah. God, you're pure, you're just. How can you use a nation that is more vile than we are to punish us? So he's really gets confused now. First, I can't understand all this going on. It's going to be, and God says he's going to give an answer here. You know, I just can't take this. So you ask the question, how can you do this? How can you take somebody that's so evil that and use them to punish a nation like us? And good question. Will we ask the same question? Sure we would. What's going on here? Are they just going to keep on destroying? Who's going to stop them? Who's going to wipe out Babylon?
God will.
Give him time. He's got a plan, right? It's going to come unfold here. So, what's the back of things going on now? In chapter 1, beginning verse 2. God's giving the back of these. He's got two questions, he's two answers. So what's the back of say?
I'm going to get up on the wall and watch.
I'm going to watch this thing. Something's going to happen here. You're going to tell me I wouldn't believe it. If it happened, I wouldn't believe it. Okay? I'm going to sit by and watch. So I'm going to see how the Lord's going to do all this stuff. He said he's going to do it up here. He's going to stand by and watch what's going to happen. So that's the beginning of chapter 2 there. Okay. We're going to come back in a few minutes and pick up verse 4, the last part, the just shall live by faith. Got three verses to help me pick up the end of the thing. We'll talk about them in more detail. There's three passages through here that are very familiar, that's used a lot in other places. We'll pick up. But Habakkuk now says, I'm going to watch and see what's going to happen. God's got an answer to Habakkuk. He says, take my message and write it down and make it very clear. Don't make misunderstandings. I'm going to tell you about this nation of Babylon. I'm going to describe them to you. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen to them. I'm going to pronounce these woes on them that we talked about at the minor prophets there. And no misunderstanding, their punishment is coming. But first, what? Before they're punished, what? What's their job?
They're going to punish.
I got something else for them to do. I got a task for them. I'm going to use them to do something else. Their time's coming. Just keep it in the back of your mind, okay? Don't get upset about it. Their time's coming. But before it does, I've got a job for them. I'm going to use them for this job here. I have an assignment for them. And that's in 2 through 4. Okay. Now God describes this nation. And let's see. Who's got it over there? Bill, read verses. Read verse 5. I guess, yeah, just verse 5, if you will. And listen to this description he gives of the nation of Babel that he starts off here.
Today, because he transgresses by wine, he is a proud man, and he does not stay at home. Because he enlarges his desire as hell, and he is like death and cannot be satisfied. He gathers to himself all nations, and heaps up for himself all people.
Okay, how does God describe Babel? Transgression by wine. What does it mean? What does it do? On the drunk side? Okay. Get a little loaded up and go out these battles out there. Very proud. We'll see more of that in a minute. Does not stay at home. Where our top man coming through like a locust is wherever he wants to go and take over does. But this enlarges his desire as hell. As Hades is what it should be. Yeah. What's he mean by this?
There is no way out to that.
That's right. What does death do? Sucks up everybody that just comes along. I mean, death's never full. It just keeps coming in. That's the way he describes Babylon. They never get filled up. Giving more, just more and more and more and more and more. They keep going in there. So as large as his desire is hell, he's like death. Just keeps sucking them there. Can't be satisfied. He gathers all nations to himself. So that's how God and heaps up a nation for people. That's how God describes Babylon. They're just like a vacuum cleaner. They spread all the nations, just suck them up, pay them up. Like a massive thing here. So, pretty good description of this great, powerful kingdom of Babylon. Okay. The God puts it in.
Ask the question, why would God use a nation like that? I mean, we would. But hey, that just shows the severity of God, but we don't do what he says.
Yep.
What he tells us.
Yep. And we're going to see in a minute, really plain, like, who's running this whole thing. I mean, that's going to come out very, very vividly down here just in a minute. God's behind this whole thing. Okay, now he's got five woes. Five woes he pronounces against Babylon. So let's go through and look at them first. First one's in verse 6.
9.
6. How about 6? How about 6? Let's get that one first. All right, Ralph, read 6, 7, and 8 there.
Will not all of these take up a proverb against him and taunting riddle against him and say, woe to him who increases, who is not his, how long? And to him who loads himself with many pledges, will not your creditors rise up suddenly? Will they not awaken to oppress you? And you will become their booty. Because you have plundered many nations, all the remnant of the people shall plunder you, because of men's blood and the violence of the land and the city, and of all who dwell in it.
What's it say about Babylon here? What's going to happen to them? What are they doing? What's going to be the cause? What are they going to do to get the cause of it?
They're building up for themselves that death is going to be saved.
Yeah, and what are they doing? I mean, what does it say here about bloody? Because of men's bloods, the remnant of the people you plunder, violence in the land, last part of verse 8 there. But verse 7 says, will not your creditors rise up suddenly? How did Babylon fall? Slow decline? Needs and purges came in and done what?
Came in at night and surprised them.
Surprised them, done, they burned the river, went into the city. They know it's there until, right, boom, there they were. Okay? You got your creditors rise up suddenly. It's going to happen, Babylon. Your time's coming. Woe to you.
They were celebrating one night, that's, and then, right, the next day, they were no more.
That's right. They were done and walked out there.
I just saw that.
Yeah, because you planted in the nation, your creditors rise up suddenly against you. This is the first one he puts against them. Okay? Because of what you've done, it's going to happen to you. Your time's coming, Babylon. So, number two is in verse 9. Mike, you got to read that? 9 through 11.
Woe to him who covets evil gain for his house, that he might set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of disaster. You give shameful counsel to your house, cutting off many peoples, and sin against your soul. For the stone will cry out from the wall, and the beam from the timbers will answer it.
Okay. What's his attitude here? What's Babylon's attitude? He was set his nest on high. Where is he?
He's in the cat merge.
That's right. In his mind, what happened to him?
Nothing.
I'm on top of the world. Nothing can destroy me. That's the attitude Babylon's got now. Okay? I'm sitting here. I'm in total control. The walls of their castles. How are they built? Where do you think the stuff came from to build?
Stone.
I mean, but where did it come from? Where did financing come from?
Other
nations. How are they built, possibly?
Slave labor.
Maybe by slave labor? Okay. Okay. Where'd you get all the stuff you got there, Babylon? Your wickedness, your meanness got it for you. Okay. You think you're on top of him? Nothing can destroy me? Woe to you.
He said, walked over other people.
That's right. Get where you That's exactly what they did. All right. Number three. Which is, 12 through 14. Who's got that? Trevor?
Woe to him who builds a town with bloodshed, who establishes a city by iniquity. Behold, it is not of the Lord of hosts that the people labor to feed that land, and nations worry themselves in vain. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea.
Okay. Another same thing quoted in Isaiah chapter 11. That phrase, I'll come back to that. That's another one, so I'll come back to in a minute about that. Okay. Build a town. The mighty cities of Babylon. Build with bloodshed. What's that? They burn with fire. They're going to go here. And all this labor, wiped out. Now, flip back right quick. It's going to take just a minute. Greg, stay on to read a few verses here. Daniel chapter 4. Put a contrast here to the situation that they see themselves in and what God is here. Daniel chapter 4. Greg, read 28 through 37. This will be very familiar to us.
And this all came upon King Nebuchadnezzar at the end of 4 months. He was walking about the very palace of Babylon. The king spoke, saying, "Is not this great Babylon that I have built for a dwelling by my mighty power for the honor of my majesty?" While the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven. King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you. And they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling place will be to meet with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen. 7 times shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. The very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar, that very hour, he was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. And at the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High, praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does what he does according to his will in the army of heaven. And among the inhabitants of the earth, no one can restrain his hand or say to him, "What have you done?" At the same time, my reason returned to me, and the glory of my kingdom, my honor, and my splendor returned to me. My counselors and my nobles restored it to me, and I was restored to my kingdom. and excellent majesty was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the king of heaven, all of whose words are truth, and his ways justice. And those who walk in pride, he is able to put down.
How did Nebuchadnezzar start out in the first part of the reading here? Now this is coming forward in time now. We're not quite there yet in history. But what is how do you feel in there?
Got to learn what's going on, didn't you? Okay. And that's what I want to say out of this. These cities you built up here, all this stuff you've done, just hold on. God's in charge. And we'll get this passage here we'll come back to again in a minute. Okay, next woe. Verses 15 and 7 through 17 there. Who's got that, Beaver?
Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbor, pressing him to your bottle even to make him drunk, that you may look on his nakedness. You are filled with shame instead of glory. You also drink and be exposed as uncircumcised. The cup of the Lord's right hand will be turned against you, and other shame will be on your glory. For the violence done to Lebanon will cover you, and the plunder of beasts which have made them afraid, because of men's blood and the violence of the land and the city, and of all who dwell in it.
Okay, what did he say he's done here? You plundered your neighbor, right? What did he say now? Verse 16, second line. You also what?
You're right. What's coming next?
It's your turn, bud.
Okay. Even after that, now it's your turn. You also drink. Be exposed to the uncircumcised. Because the Lord's right hand shall turn against you. Other shame will come on you. Babylon, your time's coming. These are woes. One after the other after the other. These pronounced against Babylon. Why are they doing this? What's the fact I don't understand?
Why God would use them?
Why is God using this abomination? Well, this Judah, that's his whole question. He's trying to get his mind right. And what's the answer? Yeah, they're wicked, but what? Their time's coming.
They're going to get a due punishment too. It's coming too. All right, next woe here gets a little introduction to it. In verse 18, he says, What is prophet is the image that its maker should carve it? The molten image, a teacher of lies that the maker of it should mold and trust in it to make mute idols. Okay? So just think about that little thing there. What good do you get from this image you carved out here? It's beauty. It can't tell you a thing. Now, the woe then is in verses 18 and 19. He says, woe to him who says to the wood, awake. To solid stone, arise, it shall teach. Hold us overlaid with gold and silver. There's no breath in it at all. But the Lord's in his holy temple. That all the earth keeps silence before him. That's the other verse we'll come back to at the end here to get to in a minute. Now, think about these idols. Powerless to save Babylon. What did we say back in verse, was it 6 in chapter 1? Where did Babylon get their faith? They got their power. Verse 11.
From their gods.
From their gods, okay.
Okay.
Where did gods come from? They made them, okay. They made them. Did it speak?
Nope.
They tell them what to do?
Nope.
So the priests and prophets of their gods speak what?
Lies.
Okay. Other than oracles, as if it came from what? This piece of stone or a piece of wood that you just cut out yourself. I mean, that same. Let me spark that, okay?
Anything that happens, whether good or bad, they ascribe to something that they themselves have made. If it had been a punishment, well, they'd say their God did it. If it was good, they'd say their God brought it to them.
So men can make the idols, they can't make them speak. Okay? That's the whole point, is getting here with this one. Okay, those are the five woes they pronounced on there. So, let's see. One of them was awake, the stone arise, the teeth, away they go, and Syria is done. But the Lord's in his holy temple. Get that from factors. Okay, now, God's answer to Habakkuk. But now, Habakkuk is aware of the wickedness that's going to come up, you know, and be punished. He's going to use these Babylonians to do it with. But the wickedness of the Babylonians, what? It'll be dealt with too. I mean, that's what he's telling. I understand how they are. And all these woes are coming. They're going to receive their judgment. So, Habakkuk's heard the Lord. He understands. And what's his attitude now?
Turns to God in prayer.
But let it come. I mean, I understand it's coming. But he says, do what? Remember what? when this comes on, remember mercy. This chapter 3 is the one we get down to some real brass tacks type thing here, and I'm back with attitude about the whole thing. I understand the punishment's coming. But if Jesus is not going to escape it, and Babylon's going to do it, you want to show me that. But when it happens, please remember mercy as you punish the nation of Judah here. In verses 3 through 15, Habakkuk goes back and recounts all the things about God's power and might. What he's done to the nation before, particularly during the invasion of conquest, how powerful and mighty he was, and the destruction he caused on the other nations there. So Habakkuk's thinking about these things, how powerful and mighty he is, and knows he can do what he's going to do. Then, in 16 through 19, get the whole thing in the climax here. Habakkuk, he's very afraid. He knows the power of God. He's been thinking about that. That's what these verses 3 through 15 are all about. He knows that invasion is coming. When it happens, then what? What are you going to have to eat? When the siege comes on you, what is it? Cut everything off, right? No supply line, no food, no crops, no, nothing to eat from there. And yet, he says, I shall rejoice because of what?
Because
his faith and trust in God. Okay? That's what Matthew puts his faith. Knowing all this terrible thing's coming. Knowing it's coming. Understanding who's going to do it to him. And why God wants it that way. He says, I will rejoice because of my faith and trust in God. His confidence of justice. He's asked for mercy. First part of chapter 3. And he understands what's going to happen. And he has faith in God that God will do what's best for him in the end. Thoughts of the man. That's the general thrust of the book of Habakkuk. Yes, ma'am. Now, I don't know. I'd be terrible to answer the bill or somebody.
Well, I was just going to say, it kind of shows here God's attitude towards him. You know, he's willing to use a more evil nation to punish Judah. You know, the point is not to be the least evil nation on the planet, because the least evil nation is still evil, and to God that means they are deserving of punishment.
No matter what level it is, right? And just because one is more violent than the other doesn't mean it's going to be less violent. Some escape any kind of punishment. All of us come back to punishment there. Good point. Okay. Let's go back and look at 3 points right quick. We've got time to do that. Go back to chapter 2 and let's look at 3 of these more familiar verses in this book here right quick. Let's read verses 1 through 4. Mm-hmm. You know, chapter 2, 1 through 4. Yeah. Go back and think about where we are now. He's asked the questions. God's answered him. Next, I'm going to sit and watch and wait and see what's going to happen. Okay?
I will stand my watch and set myself on the rampart and watch to see what he will say to me and what I will answer when I am correct. Then the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain on the tablets, that he may run who reads it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak, and it will not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. Behold the proud. His soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith.
Okay, what's the contrast there in verse 4? Behold the proud. Who is this? Chaldeans, okay. But what? The just shall live by faith. Who's this?
Would you trust in God?
Yeah. That's why I might say the nation of Judah. Not quite, okay? Ooh. Not the nation of Judah as a whole, but who in particular in this book?
The remnant.
And then back, let's last verses, 16 through 19, chapter 3 we talked about there. How did Habakkuk approach this whole thing? God said to grow. I've asked for mercy. He's just. He'll do it. Now faith in him, okay? So, will Habakkuk live because of his faith? Sure will. Okay. That's his whole thing. That's where this whole verse comes from here. Now, Chaldeans have come on the land. They're going to destroy it. Take the nation out of captivity. Know that. It's not their ends going to be coming back. Okay, they're not going to return from captivity. Those who have confidence in God would live and be happy when they came back from there, if they would follow God again. Well, no, they didn't. Okay. So their confidence should be in God. That's what should trust and sustain them. They're trusting Him to sustain them and preserve them. Now, just a general principle about this. How does it apply to somebody else? How does it apply to us? Because you have to live by faith.
Well, I think that
Paul's
saying is true today. By our faith, it'll cause us to work. It'll cause us to learn God's will. Take it serious.
What's the world around us look like?
It's evil.
Well, like that. Not much. You're right. Not too much different. I mean, different from what they were in that day, right? And what was their choice then? Get caught up in it, or put their trust and faith in God? Okay. Not going to rely on our own merit. The Israelites be delivered, but by his confidence in God. And then the same principle is true today. Okay. Not rely on our own works, our own merits, but our faith, our trust, our confidence.
Could one of the people
in Judah escape out on his own?
Why? Who said punishment was coming?
God.
That punishment was coming.
Even
the good
one
would be
carried.
Right.
Sure they would. Look at Daniel and some of the others who went there, right?
Ezekiel.
Yeah. But this. Okay. Here's a place where the same verses used, same phrases used in the New Testament several times, Romans 17. Righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith. It's written, the just live by faith. Galatians 3:11. Again. And then in Hebrews chapter 10. Same expression used again. Leave it here. So it's a great principle. Not just to live our constant exercise in faith in God. Not our own merits, our own strength, our own works, but reliance on God for our eternal life. Okay. A persevering confidence or belief in the Lord will preserve us amid the trials and calamities which we're exposed. All right, next verse. Chapter 2, verse 14. Look at this one a minute. This is in the middle of one of the woes here. Woe him, build a town, bloodshed. And he cries out, the Lord of hosts, nations weary themselves in vain, but what's going to happen? First, we feel the knowledge of the glory of God. It's the waters that cover the sea. So, first we apply it to Babylon here. Are they going to know who God was? What did we agree a while ago? Nebuchadnezzar knew who God was, horrors all over? Sure he did. Okay? So the knowledge of the glory of God was very much revealed to the Babylonians. Now, bring it to Christ's time. What he come to do?
Seek and save that which is lost.
Yeah, what's he going to reveal in doing that? The knowledge of the glory of God. Okay, he called his apostles, those around him. This is another era where this might be like we thought about here. As he came to do that, seeking and saving this knowledge that he brought with him there. And then the third part there, what's the Gospels? What's the Gospel do through all the rest of the New Testament over there? How does it spread out? What phrase is Jesus?
Jerusalem, Samaria, the Samaria,
and not a soul that did not heard.
Colossians 1:23.
So, has the earth been filled with the knowledge of the glory of God?
It's gone everywhere. Everybody has believed.
Right. But the knowledge is spread out there. Okay. It's like the waters that cover the sea.
Paul said it's been preached to every
preacher. Yep. That's getting that far ago. Yep. Sure it has. Okay. So, the knowledge of the glory of God is spread. It's out there. It's spread out all amongst us. And then the last I'm looking at is in the last part of chapter 2 here. Again, with this last woe, we talk about the idols here. So, we talked a little bit about it a minute ago. They make these idols. How much talking do they do, Mike? They can't sleep much, right? These dumb idols, okay? But they attribute everything to them. I do a lot of conquering by the power of this idol. But in verse 20, he says, you know, you better do what? Instead of listening to that dumb idol, you better do what? You better be quiet and listen to somebody else. Okay? That's the idols are silent in your word, and your prophets and priests through the speaking. In this case, we better be quiet and listen to somebody else. It's going to be done this. Okay. And all be silent. There's none of them there to open their mouths in the presence of Jehovah. Setting him at that pinnacle that the Babylonians had no earthly idea what it was like. No concept of somebody at that level. Okay. He alone is sovereign. But here his commandments, deepest respect. Obey them and worship him. So we all in humble silence sit before him. As he directs us. Okay. Habakkuk. I said time for additional discussion. There's not that much time left. Who's got some additional discussion?
Sure, so you guys want to say
you know, one of the things that the Babylonians were guilty of, Israel and Judah was also guilty of, remember, studying back in some of those topics, they were very greedy, they would use bad measures, take advantage of their wealth.
Yeah, I mean, they have become a racial realm. You know, the whole thing, the whole invasion of conquest, and when God tried to sit himself down, he wants it to be very, very different, right? At times of the history work, but they just kept intermixing. And again, where did things intermixing come in? Through time. Solomon, throw all the wives in. The wives, all they brought in, and then by the time that the kingdom was split after that, with Jeroboam and Rehoboam, what was the natural of the northern kingdom? I was fine. We've been exposed to them right here, not a year or two or so. Okay, so.
Okay,
that's all I got. Thank you.
I have a string of words.